I'm going to call the State Government Finance Committee on notice. We can't officially begin. We are short one member. Once that person comes in, we'll call ourselves to order and do the amendments and all that good stuff. But I do want to take the time here. Folks, I don't know if you've noticed this. In your packets, we've been providing you with additional financial information, which at some point we will be going into greater detail after the different agencies provide us with the additional information that we've requested from them. But in your folders is some documents. I'm going to have Ms. Roberts go over, in particular, the transfer in and out items so you guys become familiar with that piece. But I do see that we now have a quorum, so I'm going to call us to order. And if we'll Representative Pugh approve the minute or move the minutes today?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move the minutes for January the 17th.
Representative Pugh moves the minutes for January 17th. All those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The minutes for January 17th are adopted with one dissent. So with that, we're going to start with Ms. Roberts. If you can kind of go over the transfer piece, just explain it for members, too, just so they have an idea of what they're looking at on the different handouts that we've been providing to everyone.
Madam Chair, members, there are two documents that I've put together that relate to transfers. The first looks like this, and it is entitled Department of Revenue Transfers Out. And this is a report that was run out of the biennial budget system. So it does show some previous transfers, but also planned transfers going forward. And where I think it would be useful to this committee is it would show, for example, on the second line, the statewide executive recruiter, which was discussed yesterday by MMB, and you can see that the Department of Revenue then is planning for some transfers going into the future to help pay for that program at MMB. And a similar question had come up on the governor's office. The practice has been for several governors to have a portion of their staff paid for by other agencies. And again, you can see that under where the agency name says governor, the governor's special revenue fund. Those are the planned transfers from Department of Revenue to the governor's office to pay for a portion of the staff. Some of the other things that you'll note, there were some information telecom transfers in fiscal year 15. And I know we have a lot of new members on this committee, but for the few members that were here before, that was, I believe, would be related to the Odyssey account at Minute. And we will be receiving reports on transfers to that account. The second piece that you've seen before for other agencies is a report that's called unbalanced transfers, and that is a report out of the accounting system. So it has more detail on historical transfers. And again, for Department of Revenue, these are, I believe, all transfers out to other agencies, as opposed to some of the discussion where we've had where agencies are being funded by transfers in. In this case, these are transfers out from Department of Revenue to pay for services at other agencies.
And Ms. Roberts, on going back to the first sheet that you were talking about on the Governor's Special Revenue Fund, now that's different than what we saw on MMB's where they were having a transfer to the federal office, correct? Or will you need to find clarification on that?
Madam Chair, the Governor's Special Revenue Fund account, you'll see this, and I'll pull together some information specifically related to those transfers for you, going back in history too. So several, I think all of the major agencies will show these transfers to the governor's office to pay for. It's not only, I believe, the activities in D.C., but also some of the government relations staff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, maybe we'll have the commissioner answer that question, though, too, because I do think that they are perhaps different just based upon how they coded it. But we can maybe discuss that later, too. Members, any questions for Ms. Roberts on the spreadsheets that are before you at this point? And Ms. Roberts, any additional information?
Madam Chair, the other two pieces that I've that you have in your packet that are reports from the two systems, there's one, again, that you've seen called agency budget structure with funds and appropriations. Mm-hmm. And this was just to supplement the legal citation information that you had requested, so you can see the legal authority that the agencies have put into the accounting system for their various activities. And then the final piece for each agency, you asked me to do a report out of the budget system that shows expenditures by object code. Mm-hmm. And so that would be the final piece. And I should note on this one, because Department of Revenue is primarily general fund, I ran this at the general fund level. The budget system doesn't allow you to run all funds at one time, so you kind of have to make a choice or end up with a lot of extra paper that might not be useful. So. Okay.
Great. Members, any questions? Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Bowerly, and I'm the commissioner at the Department of Revenue. And with me today are Deputy Commissioner Ryan Church and Assistant Commissioner Pete Squira, who is our Assistant Commissioner for Administration, so he oversees functions such as HR and financial management. So we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have today. We also wanted to provide you all with some information about the customers that we serve in Minnesota, how we go about serving them, a little bit about the challenges that we face along with many other organizations, and how we meet those. We look forward to, again, any questions that you have may have during the presentation or after. I'd like to start by sharing with you how we focus our work. We really focus around our mission of working together to fund Minnesota's future. Our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. And that's not more or less. That is no more, no less. We take that effort very precisely and very seriously. And we are guided by our core values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. We strive to meet our customers' needs through quality customer service and a commitment to continuous improvement. Fundamentally, our job at the department is to help customers meet their obligations under Minnesota's tax laws. As you may have heard, we are about to open individual income tax filing season next Monday. Most people think of income tax filing in April, but we do open starting on January 23rd this year. That is the same day as the IRS. And we do this for the benefit and convenience of Minnesota filers so that they can file their federal and state income taxes at the same time. Many people do wait until that April deadline, but many people also do file early, particularly if they have refunds that are coming to them. And the individual income tax license is, of course, our most common tax type. Over 2.9 million Minnesotans file individual income tax returns, and it is the one that most Minnesotans are aware of. So we administer commonly known tax types like income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, but we also administer mineral taxes, lawful gambling, tobacco, petroleum taxes, and some taxes that you may not have heard of or may not know people who are subject to, the farm winery tax, the dry cleaner solvent fees, and the solid waste management tax. We administer over 30 different tax types for Minnesotans, and our customer set includes anyone who has an obligation under any of those tax types. We work year-round with our customers, not just during filing season, to help them know what their obligations are and provide resources for them to have that information and tools to be able to file and pay those taxes. So again, with 30 different tax types, we have customers across the state of Minnesota and actually around the country who have obligations here in Minnesota. 2.9 million individual income tax filers. About 1.7 of those receive individual refunds. Another 800,000 will receive property tax refunds, whether homeowners or renters. We also work with the professionals who help people file their taxes, whether those are tax preparers or accountants. We serve them and their clients. We serve veterans, homeowners, renters, members of the military, seniors, people new to Minnesota, and people who've been here a very long time. We work closely with tax preparation software vendors who have the tax filing software that you're familiar with and you or your constituents may use to file their tax. We work with them to test their systems with ours to ensure that Minnesotans can file their taxes correctly. We also serve volunteer preparers who work across the state at volunteer income tax sites, or VITA sites. VITA services are for taxpayers who are 60 or older, have a disability, speak limited or no English, or have an annual income of $54,000 or less. And I'll be sharing a little bit more about these sites because as many people approach the income tax filing season, this is important information for people to have. It's free help from IRS-certified volunteers, and we want to make sure that you and your constituents know about these services. We also serve businesses. Over 450,000 businesses file and pay in Minnesota, whether that's corporate tax or sales tax that they collect and remit. We also serve local governments. We serve all 87 counties directly with information about property tax assessment and through the Board of Assessors, which is housed at the Department of Revenue and oversees the 800 licensed tax professionals, tax assessors that work in Minnesota. We also make state aid payments to counties, cities, townships, and special taxing districts through 31 different state programs. Each of these broad customer bases has a unique circumstance and unique needs, and we serve all of them. As I mentioned, we focus on quality customer service. We do refer to taxpayers as our customers. Your constituents are our customers, and that is how we approach all of the work we do with them. I'd like to next describe how we approach our service. We start with customer service and take our customers where we find them. We have over 1,350 employees across 19 divisions that serve Minnesotans each day. We do this work in offices here in St. Paul, in 9 regional offices around the state, and from locations across the country. You have an organizational chart in your packet, and you can see that we are organized largely by tax type. Focusing our efforts around a customer. By integrating the education, outreach, and audit in one division, we build expertise, consistency, and alignment for our customers. The organization of the department has changed over the decades, and with our focus on serving customers, we think this is a very useful way for us to organize our efforts on behalf of Minnesotans. We want to focus on reaching customers where they are. We have a responsibility to make sure that customers have the information they need so that they can file and pay or receive refunds correctly the first time. The vast majority of individuals in Minnesota and businesses want to do that, and to that end, we focus significant efforts on education and outreach. Because of the breadth of our customers, we know we needed to develop a wide variety of tools. We focus on our customers taking into consideration different needs and the way they interact with us. This means we use everything from social media tools and advanced filing technology systems to paper instructions and forms. While 85% of our customers do file electronically, and we encourage all customers to file electronically whenever possible for their convenience and for their security and the most efficient service, we know that paper options are important to some of our customers as well. And so we provide paper options both by printing on our website or available by mail simply with a phone call to us. We also reach our customers through a variety of other tools. For example, we have a subscription email service. If you'll notice the red envelope at the corner of the screen, that represents a click-through to how someone can subscribe to our email service. We know that not everyone has the time to follow the details of pending tax laws or to check our website every day for updates. Instead, we use a subscription email service where people can choose to subscribe for information that they might want to receive. We have over 156 different subscription options for our customers, and over almost 300,000 people currently subscribe to get those updates. Let me provide you with an example. Tax preparers and software vendors each have their own subscription service with the department. And last week, as we were watching federal conformity move very quickly through both bodies, and we appreciate all of the quick work to get that done for Minnesota taxpayers, we were providing updates through that subscription service so that tax preparers, as they are waiting to see if these law changes are going to take place in Minnesota so that they know how to advise their customers for this upcoming filing season, they could get email updates from us as that bill passed the House, as it passed the Senate, and was finally signed into law on Friday. In fact, one tax preparer sent us some feedback on that and said that by the time that they had turned off their television, having watched the Senate session, they had an email in their inbox letting them know that the Senate had indeed passed federal conformity. And it's important for us to keep these preparers and vendors up to date because with only fewer than 10 days between final passage and when we open tax filing season, all of those different components of our tax system, from preparers to vendors, needed to be able to make those changes very quickly. So we think that this subscription service is a great way to reach our consumers, and we would encourage you to take a look. If you have any customers who would like to gather information from us, they are welcome to sign up. We use other tools as well, social media. We answer questions and provide information over the phone, by email, and even from walk-ins. Last year, we helped over 1.1 million customers with these tools. Our website serves over 2.8 million visitors each year, and we publish guidance on our website and distribute it at conferences and other events, fact sheets and industry guides to provide information to taxpayers. And we also communicate with our customers with letters. For example, nearly 200,000 Minnesotans will be entitled to additional benefit from the retroactive conformity that was passed as a part of last week's bill. 2015 taxes are already filed, as you are aware, and for those Minnesotans who are entitled to the additional benefits, we will work to make that process as easy as possible on them. Taxpayers will be receiving information from us. For the vast majority of individuals, they will receive a letter from us letting them know that we have been able to make that change and will be sending them an additional refund. Some consumers, our customers, we will need to gather some additional information from, and so we will send them a letter letting them know that. And in very rare instances, we will need to send them a letter letting them know that to take advantage of these additional benefits on their income tax return, they may need to file an amended return. But we will work to make that process as easy as possible, and we will be in communication with our customers. We plan to send those letters after we finish this initial filing season for 2016. So sometime this summer, folks should expect to see letters indicating that change to their 2015 taxes. We use all of these tools as a way, in a way we try to accommodate our customers' needs and help ensure that they have the information that we need. When we think about these tools, we want to make sure that they are as accessible as possible to our customers. Individual taxpayers in particular need very clear and concise information so they know what to do next when they receive communication from us. You've probably heard the term plain language. So this is an effort across state agencies and across the country to reduce the level of jargon that is used so that taxpayers know exactly what they need to do. So we work to provide clear and transparent communications across all of these tools, whether it's our website or letters, in our tax orders, and in our phone calls and emails. And over the past few years, we have focused significant efforts to update all many of our letters. We've won awards for this work, both at the state level and at the national level, for our plain language work and our clarity in working with customers. We've recently revamped one of our website tools, which is our Where's My Refund system, where taxpayers can track their refund through the different stages of the refund process. It will also let them know the date that their refund was sent. We also provide lots of information about tax credits and benefits that people may not know about on our website. We also provide forms and instructions on how to claim those. We use social media to reach taxpayers. I encourage you to follow. We have a Twitter account. We even have a Facebook account. And when I first joined the department, I wondered whether it was a very good idea for the Department of Revenue to have a Facebook account, where the primary question is you ask someone to like you or not. but we get a lot of traction on our on our Facebook page, and we provide a lot of information. We provide very short videos with tax tips about how to make sure you're filing your taxes correctly. Common errors that people might make. For example, in property tax refunds, if you're a renter, you need to provide your certificate of rent paid. It says so on the instruction booklet, and we also use social media to remind people of that fact. So we provide lots of information in that way. And again, for individuals, we also have email subscription services. We have 12 individual income subscription services right now, and we reach about 40,000 customers with those. We also get out in the community, and we are active in outreach across the state of Minnesota. For example, we participate in targeted training and education for members of the military and veterans. We attend pre- and post-deployment events to help Minnesota's National Guard members learn about tax benefits for which they're eligible. For example, there are tax credits available for members of the military who serve in a combat zone, for past military service, and active duty military pay subtraction, among other benefits. And we want to know those who have served our country know about the benefits that they are provided. And you'll see on the side of the screen a graphic that we use. We also bring this information to the state fair. We have a state fair booth where we do a lot of outreach and make sure that people know about these tax benefits. For military members, we talk with fairgoers about property tax refunds because that's the time of year when they are due to be filed, and also about some of the education-related benefits. For example, the deductions available for school supplies because, of course, state fair time is the time when families are also getting ready to go back to school. We also provide a lot of outreach at volunteer income tax assistance sites, so VITA sites. There's over 240 of these across the state of Minnesota. And again, they provide free preparation service for people who meet those eligibility requirements. Over 60 have a disability, have low incomes of $54,000 or less. And these sites are, information about these sites is available on our website by entering free file into our search term. And so you could get, you can find out where those VITA sites are available in your areas of the state. In addition, software filing vendors also provide free access to their software products through our website. They provide this free access to software to people who meet some of the same criteria as eligible for VITA sites. And each software vendor has slightly different criteria, but generally for seniors and for people with disabilities and with low income. And so we think it's important that people also know about those opportunities that are available for Minnesotans. And so that is available on our website, and we share this information as we do outreach work across the state. So that's what we do, some of the highlights of what we do for individuals. To meet the over 450,000 business tax filers in the state of Minnesota, we also have robust outreach efforts aimed at that customer set. We have a lot of
Sure, I'm going to pause you right there. We do have some members that have some questions. Do you have copies of the PowerPoint so we can have a better idea of where would be an appropriate place to pause so that members would have a chance to ask questions in between?
We didn't bring copies with us, but we are happy to answer questions at any time. Just
okay. I understand staff asked for that. So if you could please, for the future, if you're going to be using a PowerPoint, it just helps members because, honest to God, for a lot of us, it's tiny print to be viewing that from there, and folks like to be able to have the materials before them. So if you could provide that after the committee, I think that would be helpful for members. I've had a couple that have asked me for that. But I am just going to pause you right there. I've got a couple of members that have some questions. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I'll wait until she's done with her presentation because she's kind of in the general area.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Pugh, did you want to go ahead or?
If I could, real quick.
Yep, that's fine. Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Bowerly. Before I forget to ask, so with regard to the tax conformity bill, if a savvy taxpayer, 2015 taxpayer, already knows that they are likely to receive a refund, are they able to process that now and receive it, or do they need to wait until the summer?
Thanks. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Anderson and Representative Pugh. We will be reaching out to taxpayers. What we do not want to have happen is have them file an amended return, because then we would have duplicate returns in our system for them. They could certainly call in and check in and see where we are with progress on that. I will say there is one exception to that, and that may be one of the savvy taxpayers you're talking about. For mortgage indebtedness, for taxpayers who have who may have had a short sale or some other type of forgiveness for a significant portion of a mortgage, they would have had what some describe as phantom income in 2015, and they would have needed to file and pay on that amount. We are going to adjust those immediately so that they don't have a negative interaction with this year's taxes, because those folks may, for example, owe $10,000. We may have worked out a payment plan with them or something like that, but this year's refund would be applied against that unless we do that. So if people have questions, they should call us, and we will work to do that as quickly as possible. Our challenge is we do want to prioritize the 2016 filing season and the 2.9 million who are going to be filing for 2016.
Representative Hugh.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is, and I believe I heard that there may be 200,000 Minnesotans that are affected, and if they don't know that they're not to, and what you don't want is to hear from them, many of them may go ahead and muddy the waters and expect to receive a refund, you know, on a timely basis. So I'm concerned about the thought of waiting to send a letter to them and, you know, that may be too late. I'm concerned about that.
Chair Anderson and Representative Pugh, I hear your concern, and we will take that back and think about other ways we can do that. We have already been very proactive in our instructions to taxpayers and guidance to taxpayers and tax preparers about what our next steps will be. We've issued two press releases already and put that information out on our website. So we appreciate that taxpayers need this information, and we will continue to consider how we can best do that.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe it's kind of related to Representative Hugh's question. How do you go about when the legislature makes the changes in the taxes? A good example was last year we got rid of the tax on the veterans' pensions. And I was receiving calls all summer and into the fall now. Even people don't know that that has happened. What steps do you take as an agency to get that word out to the taxpayers?
Commissioner?
Chair Anderson and Representative Detmer, we, as soon as law changes are made, we work to update our website with that information. For example, we did that outreach at the fair. We send that information out to veterans groups, and we work to update the forms and filing instructions because, of course, when someone goes to file their taxes, that is when they will be able to take that new subtraction or the exclusion for that type of income. So the system is programmed with that law change. If someone uses tax filing software, the software vendor will prompt a question about that type of activity so that that can be entered into their system. If you'd like, I can provide you with a list of places that we sent that information out to and make sure that, you know, if you have any other sources that we could send that information, we can certainly do that. But it is built now into our tax filing system so that anyone who is eligible to take that should be able to know that when they go to file.
Representative Detmer?
Madam Chair, again, just a quick follow-up. Thank you. And, yeah, if you could provide the committee with those point, the people or the organizations that you send that information out, that would be great. Thank you.
Members, any other questions at this point? Representative Kunesh Podine.
Thank you, Chair. My question is about, it looks like you're doing a fabulous job of getting the information out there to Minnesotans, but how are you addressing folks that speak different languages, that don't read English, that are newly immigrated? What sort of programs or form of translation is available for them?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and Representative Kunesh Kudin. We recognize that we have to serve customers, as I said, from many different spaces across Minnesota. And so we do have translated documents available. We have over the phone a translation service that we can leverage for customers. And again, our VITA sites are places where we have some sites are particularly targeted towards communities where English may not be a first language. For example, there's one in Minneapolis that serves primarily Spanish-speaking Minnesotans. There's others that focus on Hmong immigrants and other Minnesotans. So we know that is a need, and we are working to provide it. We have, again, recently increased the amount of translation that we have available on our website. We think there's more to do, and that's an area that we want to continue to focus efforts on.
Thank you. Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, where can I find quick information on the 31 state taxes that your department administers?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Anderson and Representative Omar. All of them are listed on our website. If you'd like, we can provide you with a list afterwards as well.
All right. So, Commissioner, you're doing the outreach to businesses. What do you have after that?
After outreach to businesses, we're going to turn to Deputy Commissioner Ryan Church to talk about how we secure the data that we have for Minnesotans.
And then after that?
And then I will return to talk about another aspect. As I said, we focus on education and outreach. We also are charged with providing fairness for Minnesotans, so I'm going to talk about our audit efforts and some of our enforcement efforts. And then we will talk about some challenges that we're facing, and then some of which this committee has already heard about, including refund fraud and some others. And then I'll ask Assistant Commissioner Pete Squira to join me to talk about our continuous improvement efforts at the department to make sure that we are constantly evolving the services that we're providing.
Okay. At some point, too, members, you should probably go back if you save this in your records. We did have from the 2015-2016 the allocation to the Department of Revenue. I mean, that's what our primary focus is that piece. And obviously, you'll be putting out your budget request with the governor's initiative, I think, next week, right?
Yes.
And so, that's something that you guys are going to want to take a look at. I will, at some point, I think this will fall into the line of the audits and enforcements. I'd like you to spend some time on the cigarette tax in particular. But I'll wait until you get that. In fact, I'll just wait for that piece. So if you can kind of keep that in the back of your mind, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair. I'll address that, and Deputy Commissioner Church will also address, give you a report and update on how we've been spending the money that you appropriated to us as a result of last year's session. So focusing on our business customers, and again, we serve business customers whether they are in the Fortune 100 or they are startups in garages, a wide variety of businesses across the state. And we believe, again, that it's important to meet our customers where they are, whether that's here in the metro area or across the greater Minnesota or businesses located out of Minnesota who may have obligations here in Minnesota. For example, we provide classes to businesses. Information available through our classes includes a basic sales and use tax webinar. So we offer in-person classes and online so that someone in greater Minnesota doesn't have to travel to a location maybe an hour away but can take that at their convenience in their home. We have a webinar scheduled for tomorrow, for example, on sales and use tax, and another one coming up in February. Customers can get information ranging from basic sales and use tax to what kinds of documentation they should keep for their records and returns. In recent years, we have dramatically increased the number of our classes that we offer because we've heard more demand from our customers. In 2007, the agency offered about 20 classes for sales and use tax, and in 2016, we've increased that to over 100 to try to meet that customer demand. We also work to make our website as useful as possible for small businesses, many of whom may not have tax professionals assisting them, to make sure that information is readily available. And we are pleased that recently Avalara, a sales tax automation company that does business in all 50 states, recently named our website the best sales tax website for small businesses because, quoting them, of our very easy-to-find answers. So we are proud of this, and we are continually looking for new ways to make sure our website is usable for customers. Our website also provides a sales tax calculator to determine the state and local general sales and use tax rates to apply when making purchases. For some time, we were able to offer only a 5-digit zip code, and now we've improved that to a 9-digit zip code, which we know is important for retailers across the state. We have also created a withholding tax calculator to help businesses know how much withholding for their employees' wages. We provide fact sheets about various business types and recently have developed industry guides, which is a tool to answer common sales and use tax issues aggregated by industry type. So, for example, we have an industry guide for restaurants and bars, for motor vehicle industry, for the personal services industry, for retailers and wholesalers and others. And by putting all of this information into one place, it means that those businesses don't have to search across different areas of the statute to find what they need, but we provide it for them in one place. We also provide an online service, an e-portal, if you will, for filing and paying taxes. The over 415,000 businesses currently use e-services where they have their own accounts and they can manage them and file and pay them. The system also provides them with prompts and reminders about filing deadlines as they come up. Businesses also have subscription service email offerings, including 42 different services, and currently over 200,000 people subscribe to those offerings. And they, again, can simply sign up for those by clicking that red envelope. These are just some of the ways that we serve many of our two major customer types at the department, individuals and income taxes. As I mentioned, we put significant resources into information and that we provide on our website and through these many other tools and through our outreach work. We do this because customers have to have confidence in our system. They have to have the confidence that the information and services we provide, and they also have to have confidence in knowing that the information that they share with us and that we store for them is secure. And so I'm now going to turn to Deputy Commissioner Church to describe some of our efforts around our customers' data and the state's general fund.
Mr. Church, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ryan Church, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Revenue. And thanks for the opportunity today to just spend some time giving you a sense of the breadth and the depth of the work that we do and the customers we serve. And I would also just say it's been really nice that a number of us have been able to meet with individual members, just 15 minutes, and it's really been great to just have a chance to check in, see what your questions are, and get to know you a little bit more as a group of people. So thank you for that as well. We did want to take just a minute to talk about the work that we do to secure taxpayer information and our systems. This, I'm sure, is important to you and is certainly an important item for us and something that we take very seriously. And we do this in a lot of different ways. And it runs the gamut of things from how we hire and select our employees or our contractors, how we orient them to their jobs, how we make sure that they have the training that they need to do their jobs correctly and be on the alert for threats to the security of our systems and our information. It involves just keeping all of our policies and procedures up to date and current, and then taking steps, for example, to just control our physical workspace. Where we actually store and use this information also has to be protected. So there's a number of layers here. And then, of course, we do other things just to make sure that we're maintaining effective system controls, if you will. And I'd like to just highlight a few of these things and offer a couple of examples of the way we go at this. First of all, just verifying taxpayer identities. Again, this is important for lots of reasons, and we do this in lots of different ways. So, for example, Commissioner Bowerly was just talking about e-services for our business customers. We have a process for verifying those customers' identities, much like you would experience if you were to set up an online account at your bank. Again, this is just it's important because it ensures that only the taxpayer has access to their information and to their accounts. So, again, just identifying verification really is a core part of what we do. It runs throughout all of our operations and across many, many different tax types. So you'll hear us talk about this from time to time, and I just want to touch on that. The other thing I want to mention is federal tax information, or what we creatively refer to as FTI. FTI is any return or return information that we get from the IRS, the Social Security Administration, or the Bureau of Fiscal Service. It also includes any information that the Department of Revenue would create or derive from that information that comes from those returns or that return information. The Office of the IRS Safeguards audits our operation on a regular basis and make sure that we meet these very detailed and specific requirements because we rely on this information and it is not public information. It's important that they lay that out for us. So we have, again, very detailed requirements and standards for the storage, the processing, the transmitting, and the destruction of that information. And so I guess I'll just finish that point by saying that sort of adds a layer of security standards that we would deal with that you might not see in other parts of state government. Third, I'll just mention employee training, and in particular, training on information security and awareness. Our staff receive annual training and ongoing awareness campaigns, so things that we might do in our newsletters, or we would put in a special email from the commissioner, or brown bags, or many other ways that we make sure that people are paying attention and are on their toes. And the reason for this is because technology is fundamentally important to the security, but a well-trained and highly alert workforce goes a long, long ways to making sure that this information is secure. You might recall that last year there were a number of employers around the country who unwittingly and voluntarily provided W-2 information about their employees to criminals. And that did not happen because there was a sophisticated breach of our systems. That happened because a criminal called an official at the company, maybe pretended to be the HR director or someone else, called them or emailed them, and simply asked them to provide the W-2 information to them. Many of them did that. And as a result, almost perfect information for filing a fraudulent refund claim was delivered to criminals, and it addressed it impacted many, many people across the country. So this was happening in real time last session as we were talking with you about our fraud prevention efforts. But so there again, that really highlights why it's important not only to have the technology ability, but make sure that your employees are paying attention, know how to respond to those kinds of requests. Finally, I'll just mention another kind of broad area, just securing our systems. The Department of Revenue works in partnership with Minute IT Services to ensure that our systems are secure. And again, this can involve lots of different things, such as just maintaining an inventory of the physical devices we have, the systems, the software, the applications. It won't surprise you that we use things like web filtering or things that you probably use at home, like antivirus or anti-malware kinds of products. That just provides a layer of protection from malicious activity that could compromise our systems or taxpayer information. It also involves monitoring the systems and application logs that we have that help us identify anomalies or activity that could indicate cybersecurity events within the broader environment. And that, of course, is important because it helps us protect our systems in real time and then quickly respond or adapt to potential threats that we see. If you step back from all of that, and there's more, but if you step back from all of that and look at it, there's also the task of just effectively and realistically assessing your risks to these kinds of threats. And so we have a process that we go through on a regular basis where we assess those risks, we assign them in terms of relative priorities, and then we use that to really focus our resources where they can have the greatest impact on the protection of this information in our systems. And again, this often comes not through technology solutions, but it comes through making sure that your workforce is understanding those obligations and requirements. At the end of it all, I think as Commissioner Bowles was just saying, this work is really being done so that our customers can enjoy the convenience of an efficient information system that processes these returns quickly and manages their information well, but also have the confidence that their information is secure.
Question? Thank you, Madam Chair. So we want our customers to have confidence in the information that we provide to them, the tools that we provide to them to file and pay, in the system that secures that data once they hand it over to us, and also that they need confidence that there's a level playing field for all taxpayers and that the law is being administered fairly. The vast majority of Minnesota taxpayers file their returns and pay their taxes voluntarily and on time, and they expect that others will do the same. And they expect that if others do not, that the department will do the work to bring them into compliance. And so one of our jobs is to make sure that there is a level playing field across all Minnesota for all taxpayers. For example, it is unfair that when a business that is meeting their obligations under the law and doing everything right has to compete with a business that is not following the law and evading taxes. The same is true for Minnesota is individual taxpayers who expect that their neighbors are also paying their fair share. Audits are one of the tools that we use to bring taxpayers into compliance. We do want to protect those taxpayers who are doing the right thing, and so we use analytics to make sure that we are identifying and focusing our audit efforts on those who are furthest from compliance. We also use audits as an opportunity to educate taxpayers so that they can understand what their obligations are going forward. And our audits can result in one of three things happening. There may be an assessment for additional tax. There may be no change because despite what we are in analytics told us, there is actually information and documentation to support what is happening. And sometimes there is an additional refund to a taxpayer because, again, we are aiming at finding the right amount, no more, no less. And so some audits result in an additional refund to a taxpayer who may not have been aware of a credit or a deduction that was available to them. And we make sure that they do that is a part of what they are filing with us. And there are a lot of examples of how folks are trying to evade tax, and I'd like to share just two with you today. And, of course, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions. For example, back in 2010, we started to notice that there were luxury vehicles being used by Minnesota residents in Minnesota, but they were not registered here and had not had Minnesota sales tax paid on them. In fact, they're being registered in Montana to avoid sales tax. A promoter in Montana would mail the plates or registration certificate to the Minnesota resident. Because Montana has no sales tax, the Minnesota resident could evade taxes. To put some perspective around this, a $500,000 recreational vehicle could amount to over $30,000 in unpaid taxes. We partnered with the Minnesota State Patrol and other states' revenue agencies to uncover this type of noncompliance. Since we started this work in 2010, we have assessed taxes on million-dollar motorhomes, sports cars like Bugattis, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, as well as yachts and private jets. We successfully have completed 85 audits and have assessed over $1.5 million in taxes that were owed to the state of Minnesota. Another example I would like to share with you that is unfortunately becoming more and more common is around sales suppression tactics. Sales suppression is when a business intentionally underreports the sales tax that they have collected from customers. They do this by either using computer software, sometimes known as zappers, which zap a transaction out of the books, or by manually manipulating their sales tax books. When you or I go to a restaurant and pay sales tax, we expect that that business will send it on to the state because sales tax is a trust tax. We pay it as consumers, and the business collects it on behalf of the state and remits it to the state. If a business collects this tax but does not remit it to the state and instead keeps it in its own books, it has an unfair competitive advantage over the businesses it competes with who are complying with state law. So we are using new tools to identify businesses who may be suppressing these sales and bringing them into compliance. In the past year alone, we've completed over 40 audits, resulting in over $1.2 million in unpaid sales tax to the state, where the business had actually collected the sales tax from the customer but had not remitted it to the state. We know that this audit work that is important to leveling the playing field is also requires additional information and documentation from these businesses. And so we do strive to make the audit process as easy as possible for our customers. To that end, we are focusing investments and training around quality assurance for our audits. Over the past few years, a number of divisions have established quality review teams to ensure that our audits meet our own high standards of professionalism and good customer service. These teams review audits and conduct post-audit surveys of customers to measure our success and find ways to improve our process and our training for our employees. For example, in the past fiscal year, we sent surveys to over 2,500 customers after their sales tax audits. About 24% of them responded to us, or about 600. 95% of those customers indicated they were treated fairly, and almost 90% agreed that the auditor appropriately educated them about the audit process and the laws that applies to their business. I have there is one sales tax auditor who shared a story about getting a hug from the company, the person that they were auditing. I'm not saying we get hugs after every audit. I will not make that representation. But I do want to, it's a representation of how we do really focus on customer service and try to make audits as easy as possible for our customers. We have also developed new tools to make audits easier, and we will describe those a little bit later when we talk about our continuous improvements. Unfortunately, again, there are customers who do not comply with our laws. And when we are unable to bring a taxpayer into compliance through education, outreach, or audit, we may need to investigate and seek criminal charges or other penalties. Our criminal investigation unit reviews information and, when warranted, starts an investigation. We work with local county prosecutors on criminal prosecutions when the circumstances warranted. These are fairly rare situations, but they do occur in Minnesota. Our special agents have experience in law enforcement, fraud detection, auditing, and criminal investigation. Their primary focus is on catching taxpayers who intentionally break state laws, including those who file fraudulent returns. We are committed to implementing a fair tax system, and that means that taxpayers pay what they owe and that those who aren't paying and intentionally do so are brought into compliance. I'd like to share a few examples of our work to maintain that level playing field. And, Madam Chair, if I might, I'll mention, as we've been talking with this committee previously around the amount of tobacco smuggling that is happening in the state of Minnesota, since about 2013, we have seen increased tobacco smuggling. And, Madam Chair, if you're, I think your question may have also been about cigarette taxes in general. In 2013, the state did increase the rates for tobacco for cigarettes, for other tobacco product, which would be like loose tobacco. Since that time, we have seen an increase in smuggling coming from other states where our products are available at lower prices. There seems to be a pipeline, and this is common in other states as well. Illinois, for example, has low prices, and so there seems to be a great deal of tobacco, untaxed tobacco coming from that area. So to combat this untaxed tobacco, and again, this is an area where it is really unfair to the retailers who are putting products on their shelves where the tax has been paid compared to the smuggled tobacco that is coming in. And there are instances where it is coming in through, for example, rental box trucks. A whole load of tobacco will be coming in. And we can't do this work alone, so we provide training to local and other law enforcement and to leverage all of the resources of the state against tobacco smuggling. And this last year, 2 days after the department provided training to our state patrol partners, a state patrol officer seized in a box truck the largest single volume of untaxed products in the state of Minnesota. And that was about $80,000 worth of untaxed tobacco product that was coming into the state. And again, this really undercuts those retailers who are complying with Minnesota law. And so as we've been working on these initiatives, we've been working closely with the retailers and others in this area of business to make sure that we can make sure that this smuggled product is not reaching Minnesota.
Commissioner, to that end, can you give us the greater detail then about what your department has done to address that? Since 2013 was kind of the uptick, so have you added additional FTEs? What has been the overall budget hit to your department for this role? And then do you have any idea, since this goes not only to your agency, you've got State Patrol involved as well, and I don't know if you know the numbers for them, but we can certainly ask staff to find the numbers for them. But if you have a ballpark figure, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This work is primarily done with our special tax division, which covers taxes, excise taxes like cigarette and petroleum and other taxes. And this work, this is work that is a sort of a continuation of the work that they were always doing in terms of retail inspections to make sure that there are tax products being held on shelves, and our criminal investigation division, which, again, had some members of it. That unit is about 10 individuals, some of whom have always focused on this type of tobacco has unfortunately always been a source of this kind of smuggling. So we have, since the law change, as you may recall, we have presented options for additional funding to continue to fund this work. But at this point, we have not added any additional, we have not diverted or changed additional internal resources. It is more of a shift of focus of some of our folks in special taxes and in the criminal investigation division who were previously focusing on this kind of compliance and now focusing more on the smuggling aspect versus maybe some of those retail inspections. So I wouldn't be able to put a dollar amount on that because we haven't, again, added any new resources in that space that since that time, although we have asked for additional funding in prior fiscal years.
So you haven't added additional FTEs or wouldn't you, or would you say that by changing the focus of them that they would be considered an additional FTE for this area?
Madam Chair, I don't think I would describe it that way, but if I might, I'd like to go back and just confirm that my recollection of that our work of the department is correct.
That'd be
and
great.
So we'd like to follow up with you on that. I just don't want to misspeak.
Sure. That sounds good.
And with respect to other agencies, I couldn't speak for the State Patrol in particular, but as I mentioned, what we have done is provided training. For example, when the State Patrol has reason to stop a vehicle for whatever reasons that they deem appropriate pursuant to their activities, we have just simply trained them on what to look for, what information to ask a driver for example, whether there's an invoice that might state that tax had been paid on that. So again, I might refer you to the State Patrol for that, but my understanding is it is just a part of their regular work. They just have additional information available to the troopers at this point.
And, Commissioner, is there any other agencies besides DPS that is part of it? Or?
With respect to the detection of smuggling, that would be it. We do work with county prosecutors and refer cases to them. And we could provide you with information on the recent cases that we have referred to county prosecutors, largely Hennepin and Ramsey County, but we will send you a list.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I also wanted to touch on some work that we are doing around taxpayer preparer enforcement. Protecting taxpayers means that we want to make sure that when they choose a professional to serve them, that they are getting high-quality service from those tax preparers. And the vast majority of tax preparers provide quality services and meet high ethical standards. Unfortunately, there are a few tax preparers we have met in the recent years who are not serving their taxpayers well. For example, Rona Griffith was a taxpayer in Minneapolis. In 2015, after an investigation by our office, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office charged Ms. Griffith with 53 felonies. Ms. Griffith owned a tax preparation and bookkeeping business. She filed hundreds of tax returns for clients using fraudulent information. Without her clients' knowledge, she would deduct large charitable organizations, contributions to organizations her clients had never heard of, forged donation receipts, change her clients' occupations on their returns, and claim fraudulent business expenses. Again, the vast majority of her clients did not know that she was doing this, but as a result, many of them received larger refunds and others, instead of owing tax, received a refund. And, of course, this kind of result gets word-of-mouth business to other taxpayers. And so Ms. Griffith had worked with hundreds of clients that we started to notice as we were looking at those individual taxpayers, and this led us to Ms. Griffith. In addition, she repeatedly failed to file her own income tax returns. As a result of this activity, she was sentenced to 46 months in prison, and she's serving that now. And she has also been ordered to pay over $125,000 in restitution to the state of Minnesota. This was a very interesting case. This took a couple of years of work on behalf of the department, by the department, to complete this investigation. And at one point, the county attorney's office had to have the defendant extradited from the state of Indiana. So it was a very unusual case, but unfortunately is an example of what can happen because, again, taxpayers need to trust their tax preparer. And we want to make sure that we have the resources and dedicate them to making sure that taxpayers are getting fair representation, not fraud, from their tax preparers. So these are just a few of the ways that we focus our audit and criminal investigation resources on bringing those furthest from compliance into compliance and meeting their obligations under the law. And as we do that, we are making sure that there is a level playing field for all taxpayers in Minnesota. I'm next going to move on to the challenges facing Minnesota's tax system and the department, but I'll pause here for questions if there are any on our enforcement efforts.
Representative Johnson, are you going to wait till the very end?
Yeah, I'm going to wait.
All right. Representative Pugh?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Quam?
I'll wait till she's complete.
Okay. It's all yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Minnesota's tax system is facing a number of challenges, and the department is continually working to address them. First, I'd like to share with you the growing demands. We, like many organizations who provide services in Minnesota, are facing new and growing customer demands. We have seen more businesses registered and more individual filers than ever. And just to give you some perspective on that, in the last 5 years, we've gained over 80,000 new registered active business filers. We've processed almost half a million more individual income tax returns in 2016 than we did in 2007. And we've processed over 150,000 more property tax returns than we did a decade ago. So we have a significant increase in the volume of work that we are doing on behalf of Minnesotans, and we are continually evaluating how to serve more customers, mindful of the broad scope of our customer base. So there are new businesses in Minnesota, new folks, new people to Minnesota who have filing obligations. We have taxpayers who are taxpayers for the first time because now they have that first job after they're finished with school, and we have to serve all of them. And we've heard from some new demands from some of our business tax customers who would like us to meet their needs for more formal written guidance, particularly for maybe their complex business transactions that they're engaging in. And we know that we need to continue to develop electronic filing solutions for more tax types and provide information in new ways. And we continue to work to balance our growing customer demands with the resources that we have available. We are also continuing to combat refund fraud due to stolen identities. We want to make sure that we have a role in this new era of tax refund fraud. Some of you or your friends may unfortunately have been a victim of a stolen identity. And unfortunately, identity thieves are no longer just using that information to open a new credit card or engage in a financial transaction. They're using that information to file fraudulent tax returns. And those fraudulent returns pose two risks. First, to the legitimate taxpayer whose information was stolen, when they file their tax return and look for that refund, we may have a duplicate in our system. And as Deputy Commissioner Church mentioned, there were a number of businesses who unfortunately handed their W-2 files over to criminals last year, and the W-2 file is a very good set of information from which to file a tax refund. And so we need to, sometimes Minnesotans learn for the first time that their identity has been stolen when we send them a letter letting them know that we need them to call us because we have a duplicate return in our system. And so that is just starting the process for them. We work to make sure that Minnesotans get the refund that they're entitled to, but of course it is a challenge for them to restore their identity when that happens. And the second risk is of course to the general fund. Because if we let a fraudulent refund go out the door, that the legitimate Minnesotan is also entitled to that. And so that is a a reduction in the general fund if that refund is paid out to a fraudulent refund. As we mentioned just a minute ago, we last year were able to receive additional appropriation to do some of this work. And I'd like to ask Deputy Commissioner Church to provide an update on how we have been investing those resources and have them on the ground as we open this year's tax filing system for the benefit of Minnesotans.
Mr. Church?
Yep. Madam Chair, yes. As a part of the supplemental budget last year, the department received an appropriation to help us deal with the identity theft-related tax refund fraud that we were dealing with. And to put it simply, there are kind of two basic things that that appropriation was to help us do. One was to invest in technology that would allow us to improve our analytics so that we can flag those returns that look suspicious. And that's been an important part. It's been something we've done in the past. But we also, with this investment, are trying to use that to help us flag those suspicious filings that are most likely to be fraud. It's one thing to be able to flag something that doesn't look right, but the problem you may have then is you create a pile of work for people then that need to manually review those returns to confirm one way or the other. So the better we can reduce those false positives and really focus on those returns that are indeed a problem, the better. So that's really about strengthening our analytics, and that's what one component of that investment has been all about. The second part was just making sure that we had the people to do a few things. First of all, as I just said, we need people ultimately to review these returns on a manual basis to confirm whether or not there was actually fraud happening here. Secondly, we need people to be able to gather sound fraud intelligence, because we can then use that to improve our fraud filters and the analytics that we use to flag them. Because this is a very dynamic game. It changes during the filing season. What you're doing one week can change the next. And so it's important to be on top of that and gathering that information and building that in real time. And then lastly, isn't the only thing, but just a few things that these people are doing, is helping with the outreach and the education to folks who are impacted. As Commissioner Bowerly just said, it isn't altogether uncommon that someone finds out that they were a victim of identity theft when they go to file their return and find out that someone else has fraudulently filed in their name already. And so we provide information and guidance to people so they can hopefully get their lives back in order because of that identity theft. All of that work is in place. Those investments have been made. All of that work is in place, and we're ready to go with the opening of the filing season on Monday.
Is that it? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One question, Deputy Commissioner Church, as you're talking about some of the cyber issues. In addition to a singular type of incident of taxpayer fraud, mm-hmm. Do you have in place any sort of strategic emergency response plan to deal with more of a wholesale mm-hmm. cyber attack, where there's an attempt to hack a large-scale amount of personal data, Social Security information, personal ID information? Where does your department sit in regards to that kind of an issue?
Okay.
Mr. Church?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, a great question. As I said, you know, in addition to all the work that we do, it's important to sort of back up and assess the risks that we face, and then use that information to mitigate those risks. And really, the other thing that you're hitting on is, and I did not mention, is the need to have continuity of operations and disaster recovery plans in the event something like that were to happen. So it is something that we routinely do. We have disaster recovery plans that contemplate large losses or breaches like this. We exercise those plans and test those plans on a regular basis. So it's another key part of what we do to protect that information in our systems.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then to the Commissioner, looking through the information, I noticed that you have almost 70 less employees today than you did in 2009, and hear a lot about expanding government and so forth, but it seems like you've shrunk some. And as we look at the budget for this particular committee and FTEs and that sort of thing, I'm just curious what to make of this number and how that sits with your department now, the number of employees you have to fulfill the mission that you have before us.
Commissioner?
Chair Anderson and Representative, we are smaller than we have been in the past. And as we've talked about, we have growing demands from our customers. We have largely shed those FTEs through retirement or departure of employees and then not backfilling them, so through attrition. We are viewed as a good trainer of auditors and CPAs for the private sector, so we often have our folks hired away by private accounting firms. Recently, the Department of Wisconsin Department of Revenue hired a number of our auditors away as they opened an office in Bloomington, Minnesota. Wisconsin opened an office in Bloomington, Minnesota, to do some nexus work for their budget. And so we think there's more to do, and we hope to be able to come back and talk with you again after the governor's budget to talk about potential investments. I think that one of the challenges we hear from our customers is they want more from us, and we would like to be able to provide them with more by way of services, whether that's classes or whether it's some of that more formal guidance that some of our more complex taxpayers like large businesses are looking for. So we know there are needs that we are not able to meet at this point. And so given our broad scope of customers, the many, many customers that we have who come from, again, whether they are very small businesses or large businesses or individual taxpayers, we know that there's more that they would like us to be doing for them, and we would like to be able to meet those needs.
Okay. Just one last question, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
One thing, reading through the information that you provide us, I can't help but notice that it seems to me that you try to, rather than bring down a big hammer on people that use your services, you try to, as much as possible, to resolve issues and debts collaboratively. Is that correct? For example, I'm impressed by the number that 96-97% who resolve their appeal with the department without appealing to tax court. Are those good numbers compared to what you would expect or other states, that sort of thing? What's your comment on that?
Commissioner?
Chair Anderson and Representative Johnson, I don't actually know the numbers for other states, but I will tell you that when I first joined the department, I thought those numbers were very good. I was impressed that we are able to reach conclusion with so many taxpayers. In Minnesota, taxpayers have the choice to go directly to tax court after an order, or they can go through our internal appeals process, and then after that internal appeals process, they can still take that to tax court. And so many, as you pointed out, the vast majority of those appeals who come through the department are resolved within the department, and of course that saves litigation costs for both that taxpayer and the department. And of course, they still have that legal opportunity available to them. So it tells us that they are getting good results, because if they were dissatisfied with the results, they would still be able to go to tax court. And I will tell you also that we work whenever we can and as collaboratively as we can in the debt collection process as well. We are charged with collecting debt on behalf of other state agencies, all 87 counties in the judicial system, in addition to tax debt, and we work with our customers to set up payment plans. If there are financial hardships, we can review that information and make adjustments and let those other agencies know as well. So we do try to work collaboratively with our customers and resolve matters when we can and when it's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota and the taxpayer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner, just a couple questions. Earlier you mentioned the 40 audits that were performed, and you generated about $1.2 million from those 40 audits. Was it one business, two businesses? How many were out of compliance that generated the money for the $1.2 million?
Madam Chair, I would need to get back to you with specifics, but those 40 audits would have been for 40 different individual or 40 different businesses, mm-hmm. business entities who had sales tax remitting obligations under the statute, and I believe that they were all additional tax orders, meaning that each owed additional tax.
One.
But I will confirm that and get that back to you.
Okay, well. Great. And then the other question that I had is looking at your numbers. All the agencies have been comparing back to 2009, and I know that you've said that you're going to provide additional information, because I'd actually like it to go back to 2006.
Okay.
But can you tell me, when we did the IT consolidation, that was Representative Kahn and Representative Downey's piece of legislation, how many of your IT people then went into Minute, and what was the FTE exchange for that consolidation? Can you provide that? And if you don't know it right now, I think that would be helpful as answering, I think it's item E, if you can.
We will provide that additional information, but generally we have about 125 people who work in Minute at Revenue. So they are MNIT employees, and they are assigned to the Department of Revenue to do the work with us. If your job at the department is in that classification of employees that fall into that IT category, what we used to call the Information Security Division, Information Services Division, they were all transferred at that point, is my understanding.
Okay, so they're not part, they were removed from your FTE count and put into the minute category?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how we count our FTEs. So the 1350 does not include any of the minute employees.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Pete Square, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. That is correct. Our 1350 FTEs does not reflect the minute employees at this time, and we'll go back and put some history together for that transition throughout the years.
And if you could highlight as part of the FTA, I think that explains so people have a better idea of why you're seeing the changes in the numbers. Representative Kwan.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And a couple of areas, the first being, you know, the IT and the summary sheet, you indicate 2.8 million visitors served, 700 million page views. I was curious as to, building off of Representative Johnson's question, if you've ever suffered any DOS, denial of service attacks, what is the annual cost for this website, and how often has it crashed in the last year or two?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Kwan, we will have to go back to you with the cost for the website. To our knowledge, the website has not crashed in the last year. We have had to take it. We have had scheduled maintenance happening at certain times, and we try to do that. For example, we just did some scheduled maintenance over the long weekend, and we did that starting at 6 a.m. on Sunday to try to reduce any inconvenience for our customers. And to my knowledge, we have not suffered a denial of service attack. I know that Minute Central can provide you all with additional information on that sort of perimeter security issue that happens, but to my knowledge, the department has not suffered that.
Representative
Kwan? Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. Maybe that how you can run probably the most highest traffic website in state government without crashing, where some of the other agencies have had some multiple crashes. Still in the IT, in the data informatics, so you've got in another section, you prepare over 600 revenue analyses. On that, how many, you're running through, I assume, logic, search, and other triggers to then, pull things out for flagging, for audits. About what percentage of the 5.8 million returns are searched? And then, how many quantity of flag that gets audited either through a further analytical analysis by software or by actual people?
Madam Chair and Representative Kwan, just a point of clarification, the 600 revenue analyses that's indicated on our cover sheet, revenue estimates that are provided to the legislature when you all are considering tax law changes. The tax committees can request a revenue estimate for impact, and that's the work level that is shown there. So in the last session, I think it was it ebbs and flows, of course, depending on member requests, but that's what that indicates. As to your question as to percentages of the returns or the information on individual filers that we have and that we use for analytics, we'll have to get back to you with that. So I understand your question. You're looking for sort of the percentage of audits that come out of filing by tax type. Is that an accurate? I want to make sure we're getting you the information you would like.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Trying to understand the tool utilization. And I assume you've used data analytics and other tools to scan the filed returns for flags, either logically triggered or other triggers, to then promote them to a list to be further analyzed or audited. And it'd be, I'm just curious, and later on you can maybe give us more detail into that side of it. I did have one final thing. I'm not sure who generated this, but on page 3 and then page 10, account 2360, the healthcare access fund is actually you're projecting out as that being greater in fiscal year 18 and 19 than in 14-15. But my understanding was that was being phased out, and is that, are you working off a different assumption than my interpretation of what the actual statute is?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, the provider taxes that fund the Health Care Access Fund are scheduled to sunset at the end of calendar year 19, and so they should show zeros after that, and I'm not sure if that. Oh, I'm sorry. We were talking about appropriations, not the revenue generated. I'll let Assistant Commissioner Square answer that question. I'm sorry.
Mr. Square.
Madam Chair, Representative, the numbers that you see on pages 3 and I believe 10 you referenced, these are what's current appropriations in our base budget. They are direct appropriations that are held in the base of our operating budget. So if there is, in fact, a healthcare access budgetary balance issue, those because of the repeal of the tax, we would have to revisit that within our base operating budgets.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what I was after is if we have something being phased out or has the option of phasing out, if we have projections or expected future base, it might be nice to understand the assumptions of which they're underlying their base projections, because there are a couple of triggers in that the statute to not just sunset but actually a phase out depending on balance, and that's just one example of probably there are many accounts that have intricacies, and if we're looking at the budget as a whole, understanding the bases and assumptions behind their projected may assist us in more appropriately addressing this budget and others.
Well, Representative, I'd like to talk to you more about that piece, but this has just raised the issue of what do you use the HCAF, Healthcare Access Fund dollars for?
Madam Chair, those are funds that we use to make sure that there's compliance. Again, we do outreach, information, and compliance. So for the taxpayers who do file and pay under that, those provisions of the law, we have information available to them. They have a filing system available to them. And then we audit those as well.
And if I remember, and help me remember this, if I understand correctly, the fund balance dictates what the rate of the tax is, and so that's what you're basing your revenue off of, because we haven't reached that point to sunset it at that. I realize the law says it's going to be done at calendar year 19, but I thought that what the rate of the tax was based upon how much money was in the fund. Is that correct? And so are you basing these numbers off of that, or?
Madam Chair, no, we're not basing our direct appropriation numbers off of any future projections. In fact, we're not responsible for the fund statements for the Health Care Access Fund. The Department of Revenue has, from my understanding, no role in the actual fund statement for the Health Care Access Fund. We would work with the agency responsible for that for adjusting or making recommendations to the legislature to adjust the appropriations as necessary. But also, as our work, our work is continued for, as Commissioner Bowerly said, for these taxpayers, we would have to find resources to cover those that work in the future if we so needed to reduce the Health Care Access Fund appropriations.
Okay. We might come back to that piece. Representative Quam, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I think the Chair Anderson addressed the issue of 1,350 employees. Now, are these full-time, or someone could be half-time, and two half-times equal a full-time? What's your total number of people that are employed by your agency?
Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, that is an FTE number, so it is a full-time equivalent number. We do, the vast majority of our employees are full-time employees. We do bring on some additional staff during the high filing season, so we will be bringing on some seasonal staff and running two shifts starting very soon into the spring to work on that processing for income tax filing. But that number represents a full-time equivalent.
Yeah, I'm sure. And Commissioner, so those outside people are brought in, just like you said, during the high work time. One more question, Madam Chair.
Representative
When if a veteran is deployed and away from his home, away from the country and so forth, what can a family do during tax time and the veteran is deployed? Do you do extensions and help these families out?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, if there is a situation in which such a deployment were to affect or limit their ability to file and pay their taxes, we certainly can work with individuals. There is an extension available to any taxpayer until October. And, of course, in certain circumstances, we can work with folks and understand their situation if there's some reason. I will share with you, for example, when there are disaster declarations, if, for example, a flood, for example, destroyed records for businesses, we can work with them to make sure that they don't have any penalties or interest assessed. Ultimately, there may be tax owed and the right amount would need to be paid, but we can certainly work with folks around penalties and interest under certain circumstances.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, first of all, I want to get my facts straight, because you mentioned that if I heard you right, you mentioned that there was 500,000 new refunds this last tax season. Is that right?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Green, let me just pull up my notes. It's over a period of time. I believe it was not this calendar year, but over almost 500,000 additional income tax returns over the last, I think, since 2007.
Representative Green?
Okay. No, that makes a little more sense, I guess. And then is that the same time period for, I thought you said, 150,000 new property tax refunds?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know if that is due to the fact that we had that many more people come into Minnesota, or is it due to the fact that possibly wages went down and now these people are eligible for refunds?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Green, one of the reasons for the increase in the property tax refunds was the change in the law that allowed more people to qualify for the refund. We also attribute it to some work that we did at the request of the legislature to send a letter to everyone who may have been eligible. I believe it was in 13 who hadn't filed, to let them know of this opportunity. And so we did see an increase after that outreach effort.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of questions. The first is with regard to, I believe I heard, 80,000 new businesses, and I'm wondering if that is a net additional new businesses, or if it's a net number.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, that represents 80,000 new registered businesses in our system. I don't know that it would be accurate to say that that's how many new businesses were in Minnesota. I wasn't trying to make that equivalent. And what I can go back and check to see if we track a business, of course, can keep their account open with us, so I'm not sure if that would be reflective of a net, and I'm not sure that we would particularly capture sort of a net of businesses that may have closed, if that's what I understand your question to be about, because a business could choose to keep their account open with us in case they want to return.
And Madam Chair, so yes, I would be really interested to know whatever net information you were able to capture, just because a business would remain open. They may not have any activity, and so that would be a net zero. I mean, if there is any information that you have like that over a period of time, I would be most interested to see that. And Madam Chair, yes. Shifting gears, with regard to the number of fraudulent refunds that were processed. I'm wondering if you have an approximate number of how many filers that experienced something like this, and you know, what the cost was to the state, if in fact the state actually paid, and then that was a hit to the general revenue.
Commissioner? Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, we'll need to follow up with you on that. There were tens of thousands of returns that we suspected of having fraud in them. We believe that we stopped the vast majority of them from going out, and we'd be happy to provide some more information about the numbers of returns that we think were fraudulent and the amount of money that we think that we believe that we prevented from going out the door. And then, you know, our system isn't perfect, and so there may be refunds that went out that were not caught by our system.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and yes, thank you very much. I'm certain that everyone on the committee would be interested to know what the threat was, and no doubt still is. And then I have one last question, Madam Chair. Thank you. With regard to the debt collection that your agency assumes responsibility for, if you could also get us what that looks like, you know, how much revenue do we bring in? I'm wondering if the write-off, I'm assuming that some of that becomes bad debt. I'm wondering to what degree that is occurring, if it's a rising incidence as families are struggling more, and I would appreciate that as well. I'm assuming you don't have that information with you today.
Commissioner? Chair Anderson and Representative Pugh, we'd be happy to provide that information. And just so I make sure we understand exactly what you're looking for is the amount that in dollars and maybe the number of debts that we're collecting, and then any write-off information to the extent possible.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, and I was also thinking, so I would like to make a request. I'm wondering how many state resources are spent, you know, in full-time equivalents to pursue this debt collection. I know that that's a costly experience. I'm just curious what the payback is for the investment that we're making as a state. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. Curious on the, and I'm not sure who might want to answer it, but on the total expenditures going up considerably from actual 16 to estimate 17, I'm looking at, I'm guessing 16%, and talking about page 3, curious what is driving that kind of an increase from 140 million to 162 million, assuming those are in thousands.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, if you dig down into the pages, you'll see that we have the ability to carry forward dollars from the first year of the biennium to the second year of the biennium, and we have a significant roll forward from the first year to the second year. Now, some of that is a planned roll because of time and expenditures. I think Commissioner Bowerly mentioned before our staffing issues that we've had over the past year as well, where the Department of Wisconsin comes in and hires 26 sales tax auditors from our staff. That was unexpected. So those are some of the things that we planned in and didn't plan in fiscal 16, which rolls forward into 17 that we can plan on, and some of the things that we cannot plan on as well.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, if you look at 18, and I realize maybe that doesn't have inflation built into it, but now we drop back to 154 million. So is it just that there was a buildup in funds and now you can pay people extra or have expenses in 1 year and then they go away the next? Or just curious.
Mr. Square? Or Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Vogel, as Assistant Commissioner Square mentioned, some of this was about planned, particularly IT expenses. Sometimes we plan those to hit in certain fiscal years. And so what we are and you've noted that starting in July 1st of starting the next fiscal year, we will have a different level of appropriation. And so we have a plan to spend the resources that the committee has given us for the 2-year biennium, and we will meet that target. And what we've done, again, as the commissioner explained, we had some salary savings, if you will, from open positions that we are now using to make some additional investments.
Representative Vogel?
One more then, Madam Chair. Well, the other thing is then if we look at compensation, it goes from $113 million down to $108 million the next year. And combined with that, you know, it looks like you've been averaging well over 6% a year in salary expense, because if we go back to fiscal year 14, they're a little over 71,000 an average employee, and now we're almost 84,000. So just curious if you've had a trend of having to increase the payroll cost by over 6% a year or almost 6% a year, and then all of a sudden you're going to drop it and drop the number of employees. Is what are we doing, I guess, is the question.
Commissioner, Mr. Square.
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, we have seen compensation packages significantly change over time. We'll have some more information next week as we release the governor's budget that we can share at that time on some of those changes. And we can definitely dig deeper into these numbers. One of the things that we did do in 17 to rise compensation increases is we made some resource one-time hiring decisions that were impacting some of the operations throughout the department that we felt that we absolutely needed to have in fiscal 17. So that's one of the reasons why the compensation does go down in 18. But we can dig much deeper next week when the governor's budget comes out and the compensation packages.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Commissioner, I want to go back to one of the topics that you and the Chair were discussing, and that was the minute consolidation. Prior to that, were those people who were doing IT services for the Department of Revenue housed physically and on your budget?
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, it's my understanding that those employees were part of the agency's budget.
Madam Chair?
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you. Commissioner Bowerly, then when there was the consolidation and those people were taken off of your FTE roster and put on the minute employee roster, are those people still physically then housed in your house but on some other agency's payroll?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Driscoll, there are a significant number of employees who are physically housed at the Department of Revenue, and again, about 125, and they are technically minute employees who are assigned to the Department of Revenue by that agency.
Madam Chair? Then are you billed back for those services, and do you also bill for housing those employees within your budget and your agency when they're employees of another agency?
Question?
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, I'm going to turn to Assistant Commissioner Squirra to describe how we fund our work with Minute.
Mr. Square.
Madam Chair, Representative Driscoll, we are billed for those services that each employee is serves to our agency. I think you mentioned the space that they were occupying in our building. That is not billed. We pay that directly from our budget.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I'm sorry I missed one of my questions in your summary because I don't have your presentation. You indicate that 879,570 property tax refunds worth $656 million are processed. In my understanding that requires mean testing, and that how long does this take to run? What is the cost? And do you run this in situ FIFO or do you batch it?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Quam, those over 800,000 property tax refunds are processed by the department starting after the income tax filing season is over. So we start processing those in late summer and pay those out over the course of the fall. As to your question about whether we batch them, We process them and release refunds as we process them sometimes on a daily basis. We are issuing those refunds out either to electronic filing format, so they go through an ACH clearance process, or to be issued in checks. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, so offline, I assume you can pass us to what the actual cost and time frame of processing those are, so we'd have that data. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, the IRS recently put out a statement saying that there should be an expected delays for tax returns. Would that also apply to you guys? Is there expected delays? And if so, how are we getting that information out to taxpayers?
Question. Madam Chair, Representative Omar, pursuant to a federal law change last year, the IRS is going to be holding any refunds that generate from the earned income tax credit, and I believe that date is February 15th, that they cannot issue those refunds until after that date, pursuant to that law. Our plan in Minnesota, we're obviously not directed at the same level at that law. Our plan in Minnesota is to process refunds as they come in and do it so as quickly as we are able to. We, as we've mentioned, are always fighting this issue of identity theft refund fraud and making sure that the right amount goes to the right person. And so we will process returns. We don't have any built-in hold dates or anything like that, but we will take the time that it takes us to make sure we're verifying that it is the right person who's receiving the refund. And in this new era of refund fraud, returns are going to take longer for some people than they have been in the past. And one of the reasons we made changes to our Where's My Refund system on our website is so that people would have more precise information about where their return was in the processing system, including a stage where it might say that we've sent the taxpayer a letter because we need additional information, or we may have a situation where we have a duplicate return and we want to verify identity. And so that is information we are putting out to our customers, again, throughout filing season. We've already issued a release about tax tips and what to expect with refund processing. We will continue to do so on our Facebook page and social media, through all of those VITA sites who are located around with nonprofit organizations around the state, and make sure that any of our media outreach includes information for taxpayers about what to expect for this filing season.
Thank you, Chair. Some of my friends, neighbors, and constituents have expressed concern with not getting their property taxes. What are we attributing to those long waiting periods, and how soon can they expect to get their tax return?
Chair Anderson and Representative Omar, we have processed about 98.8% of the property tax refunds that we have received in the summer. We do receive them every day because there is a two-year window to be able to file that refund claim. And we know that there are many folks who are still waiting for that. And we attribute, we are working on those as quickly as possible, and we expect that in the next month we will have, again, for those that were filed before those due dates, have those issued within the next month or so, or we taxpayers will have a letter from us indicating that we need additional information. The refund fraud that is affecting individual income tax refunds is also affecting property tax refunds. And unfortunately, we're also seeing this move into business refunds because, of course, businesses may be eligible for sales tax refunds or other types of refunds, and we know these thieves are also looking at that system as well. So we're trying to do all of this work, and the additional resources that we received as an appropriation last year, we believe will help us do this work faster for Minnesotans for this individual income tax filing season and this year's property tax filing season.
Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Members, any other questions? Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Deputy Commissioners. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, members, we are adjourned.